Hello, lifers. Welcome to our this weekend's edition of Living Entrepreneurship by Salty. My name is Jesse, the African Sun. I am here with Ephraim Ramwenke, who is trying to fix his microphone. He was never ready. How are you doing, Ephraim?
I am blessed, my brother. How are you?
Just last night, I was having, I think, one of the first send-off parties of a staff member who I found to have been a very, very committed member of staff, a very hardworking. He puts in so many hours. He works through the night, trying to. He's so detailed onto his final output, and I just loved him for that. So when he sent me a notice that he wanted to leave, and I learned of the opportunities ahead of him, I could not hesitate to let him go. I didn't have a conversation of, I'd like to retain you, because I saw what he was going for was actually very big, and he needed it. And so we were there celebrating him. It was very emotional for him, and it became very emotional for us as he received our compliments and appreciation for service being given. I know sometimes when we do business, it's difficult to attract good talent and also to retain good talent. But there's also an aspect of when there's an opportunity of growth and you have to let go of your staff. Let's start from there. How easy does it come?
So I'll tell you, one of the interesting things you learn about employee retention. So there's a saying, we talks about, now this one is about team development, right? If you make a mistake of not training and developing your team, they say worst case scenario is that they leave after you've trained them. But even worse than that is that they stay. And that statement, at least that saying, comes into play when especially you're referring to the importance of quality labor. I'll be honest with you. Organizations are built on teams. Why? Because the only way for you to truly scale any business or even manage your small business, you need a team. Even if it's you and one other person, even if it's you and two other people. The reason being is that productivity gets multiplied. That's number one, when there's a good team. Number two, scale is easily achievable. And then three, you have a diverse pool of knowledge and skills that deepens the organization's ability to perform. Now, what I've seen, and now coming back to how hard it is to let go of somebody, what I've seen normally is that once you find a very, very good person, they add something to an organization. I would call it, let's say, an X factor that is unique to that individual. It's almost like, take a family with many siblings. Even when there are twins in that home, the reality is that there is something unique that those people bring to the home that when they're not around, you feel that their presence is not around, even if it's the quiet person. And that's what happens with a good fit of an employee. The same thing is true for a bad employee. When a bad employee is bad, like when you have someone who's really not adding value, when they're not around, you can tell. You're like, hey, finally, work is moving and stuff are progressing. So I'll tell you, honestly, it's not easy. Letting go of somebody that you've worked with for some time, somebody who has performed, someone who has been consistent, because, again, the process of replacing them is not just expensive, but it's also time consuming and a bit tedious. And it's not a guarantee that even if you invest all that time, energy, resources in finding the right person, that you're actually going to find somebody.
Yeah. And then I would ask, how do you, after losing someone too good, how do you identify quickly and replace their skills?
This is tricky. Why? Sometimes you don't know what is needed for a job to evolve, an opportunity, like that role to evolve. But I'm not going to get into that now. Let me talk about the first step, right? Look at what made the other person effective at that job,
right? Sometimes it's just their personal traits.
Exactly. And but by the way, you know, you can hire for personal traits. So there's something I remember talking about. I don't know if we talked about it on this podcast. I talked about talent mapping. I talked about there's hiring for skills, there's hiring for talent. So what happens is that when you're designing a job description and you're looking at the ideal candidate who would fill this role the best way, most people focus on the skills. So this is the degree they need to have, the education level, this is the experience they need to have, and that's that. But very few people actually go and look at what's the character trait of the individual, or character traits, what's the personality type? Are they a type A type of personality for example, a sales job? Are they somebody who are self-starting? I know people think all jobs need self-starters, but there are some jobs where you need somebody to keep asking up their boss to verify whether they have permission to move forward. Mm-hmm. And so you find that, I would say that right now you have lost this individual. Sit down and look at what made them who they were from a skills perspective and from a talent perspective. Once you have that profile, now when you go look for candidates, the first stage to get to receive applications, you're going to look at the skill side. Mm-hmm. But now when you do go for the face-to-face interview, you need to design it in such a way that you're looking at talent. Because again, at the end of the day, you've looked at, when somebody applies for a job, you're going to look through their CV and see that they have the skills, at least on paper. Then when they come for the interview, the first step is an aptitude test, right? Mm-hmm. The first aptitude test is to verify whether they actually have the skills. Then after you move past the aptitude test, now that's where you now go test for personality. So some people have different things, right? There are those who put them in a room and observe them doing a test. There are those who will do a face-to-face interview. There are those who do a video interview. But the whole essence of those interviews is to look for talent. Some people who are in HR don't actually understand why they have to do a physical interview. But most of the time, it's not just to get to know someone, it's, or to check the vibe. Even though that is important, it's actually to check talent. Mm. Yeah, whether they meet the talent profile.
Very interesting. I read, I'd like us to stray away from this good talent that unfortunately I have to lose and let go.
Mm.
And certainly I'm happy for them because I had an opportunity to say, please don't go.
Mm-hmm.
But then I do appreciate that growth is needed for everyone and you should not stop anyone from growing unless within your organization, if you are able to offer the opportunity for them to grow at a speed that they want to grow at. Otherwise, you'd frustrate them.
Mm.
I read something, I don't know if it was from the Wall Street Journal, about an employee made in hell.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what comes to your mind when you hear employee made in hell.
Okay. It's simple. For example, I'm an accountant, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, everything can be quantified, even though some people would argue with that. But I think, if you're looking to improve something, I've said this before, you have to find a way to measure it, right? Or at least you have to measure it. And some things are a little bit more qualitative. And so you find measurements are hard, but you can always find a metric of measurement.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why do I bring that up? When you look at employee performance, it can actually be quantified.
Mm.
And when we talk of an employee from hell, is where they are abysmal when you look at the numbers. Though some people would argue and say that there are some employees who bring in money, but are actually hell to work with.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say that person is necessarily an employee from hell, though. I'm being serious. At the end of the day, you're in the business of making money. So the question then comes in is that if you find someone who is a performer but a very bad cultural fit, how can you isolate them and still reap the benefits from that performance? So I'll give you a simple example. So if an employee is very bad for the culture, let's say they're a very good performer, but they are a gossiper. They know how to stir up trouble and lead revolts. Allow that person to do remote working. Just keep them out of the office. Find ways to avoid them from mingling with the rest of the team. That's just an example. I know I'm oversimplifying this, but what I want to talk about is, we like to define employees from hell, especially from we like to define them from a personal level. Let me explain what I mean by that. We will look at dealing with someone and we will say, this person offended me in this way, so they must be a bad employee. Or this person, I'm not talking of as a superior, I'm talking of as peers, right? Mm-hmm. They're not gonna now move to as an entrepreneur or as a leader. You find that you'll be like, this person reported me to the boss. They must be an employee from hell. In terms of, you want to give them that title. But I'll be honest, if you remove yourself from the picture and just be objective and ask, based on the purpose of why this individual is in the organization, are they adding value to the organization as a bare minimum, what we call the threshold, right? Beyond the threshold, are they now going above and beyond the expected value and adding more? Now that's what we call an employee from heaven, right? But now we talk of those below. Is this person taking away from the company? So are they hitting their targets as per their contract? Okay, let's say they're hitting their targets. From an environmental benefit, are they adding value to the environment in which they work? If it's a no, how do you remove them from the environment and still isolate that performance, like I said before? Now, my definition of an employee from hell is someone who doesn't hit their targets, period.
Yeah, you're close to it, because the writer talks about the employee from hell as they're underperforming, but they have an assumption that they are the most critical talent needed for the company to survive.
I don't know. I feel like you're about to say something about Gen Z, but let's continue. I can smell it.
No, I'm not even going there, because, I mean, from past generations, there's just that someone, either because they are close to top authority, and so they assume that they occupy a lot of space and importance within the organization structure, and that their being there is so critical, you might not survive without them.
So the person who wrote this said that the person underperforms, but
they assume they are overperforming.
There's an element of arrogance and ignorance in the belief that they believe their self-importance is significantly higher than reality. So they're pretty much doo-loo-loo. Okay. So now the question then, I'm curious, when we talk of an employee from hell, did the writer talk about anything around culture? Like the person, beyond performance, did they talk about their behavior, in regards to the interaction with others?
You know, that employee who is always asking the unnecessary questions for the sake of asking.
So that they have the last word.
They make a lot of noise. Mm. If it's a company WhatsApp group, they are always typing. Mm. They seem to be contributing, but actually it's hot air. It's just there. I mean.
and so now let me ask you a question. Have you ever dealt with an employee from hell?
Oh, yes, many times.
Many times?
Many times,
And yes. So can you give me your latest example?
There is this particular employee who normally would say, I think you underestimate my relationship with the board members.
Wait, what? So if they have a relationship with the board members, why don't they have your job? That's a very good question, no? The question is, if they had a good relationship with the board to the extent that they think that they do, why don't they have your job? There's a reason why you have your job, and then they have that job.
And so they could command around everyone within the hierarchy, of course, unofficially, but they express themselves with a lot of importance. Mm. Like, I'm coming to you because I know what the board is thinking about you. And
was there any reality to it?
No.
So now then the question, I'm curious, how did it end? Did that person eventually leave, or they are still around?
Eventually somebody had to stand up to this individual and assure them that their role starts and ends somewhere. Mm. And they just had to shut them up.
No, that's crazy. So now, then for me, when I think about that, I would say that as a leader, one of the most important things you need to do, especially when it comes to dealing with such employees, is understanding you need to have, I know I'm using now technical terms, but an M&E framework. You have to have a KPI. You have to have something that is, it's a there's a feedback loop. Let me put it in simpler words. Mm-hmm. And this is for the entrepreneurs, you listen. You need to have a way of spotting talent, and you have to have a way of getting rid of talent. At least getting rid of people.
Mm.
So you need to be able to hire slowly, but let go quickly. You've heard that saying before, right? Bringing on someone, you need to take your time, make sure that you understand who they are, they understand who you are, you understand where you're coming from, because at the end of the day, there's something I listened to recently, and it was crazy. It said, who you believe you are will come out when you're under pressure.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you understood how deep that was. Your default setting of who you think you are will manifest when you're under pressure. So if you believe that you are not capable of performing, when you're under pressure, you're going to cave. If you think that, let me give you a simple example of, let's talk of money, right? If you think that there's no future for you to make a lot of money, you think that the best you can ever do is, let's say, where you are right now.
Mm-hmm.
And then you find yourself under financial pressure. And then an opportunity to take a bribe or to steal comes up. What's going to happen? You're going to steal. Mm. But if your internal belief of who you are is, look, whether I don't have it today, I know tomorrow I'll get it. Even when you're under pressure and someone is on your neck and they're like, I need money, you're not going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and so that what they were trying to say was that our internal, our belief about ourselves will always manifest itself when we are under pressure. And so when I look at dealing with hiring employees, you need to find a way of gauging for how they perceive themselves. And that's why some of the best business people, when you rate them on a scale of self-awareness and the ability from a psychological perspective, like the ability to psychoanalyze individuals, it's really high. You need to be able to assess someone's character and what goes on in their inner being from just a conversation. And I'm sure you know that, Jesse. We've talked about this.
Living Entrepreneurship by Salty here, Ephraim Ramenge. My name, Jesse the African Son. We are your hosts, and we're glad you are listening to this conversation. Now, let's take a breather, and we should be right back. Welcome back to Living Entrepreneurship by Salty. We are speaking about a very profound subject of building a team. Ephraim, does finding good employees really necessarily have to be very expensive and very difficult and very tedious?
In the beginning, yes. And I'm saying yes with an asterisk, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is, at the bottom, there's a footnote, NB. What I would say you need to note is that when I say expensive, it's not just financially. There's also going to be an investment in time, a lot of time,
mm-hmm.
and initially. But once you figure out the initial aspects of it and you have a system, it becomes almost automatic and it becomes inexpensive. Now, let me give you a simple example, right? When you take the Microsofts of this world and you look at their cost structure, or most tech companies, but let me use Microsoft as an example. They're in the business of, traditionally, in producing Microsoft Windows, right?
Mm-hmm.
The software, the operating software, right? The way their cost structure is designed is that majority of it goes into R&D. This is research and development.
Yeah.
And so majority of their money goes into developing the software. All the engineers they have, it's in development. That's the first stage of their business.
Mm-hmm.
But then the second stage of their business is distribution. Now, once they have developed the OS, which has taken billions of dollars, to put that OS I'm talking of now the old method, then I'll talk about the new method, which has now also changed their business model. Putting the OS on a CD-ROM, as they used to do before, right?
Mm-hmm.
And distributing that barely costed them anything. Barely cost them anything. Now, what does that simply mean? it means that majority of the cost of developing that software is on the back end, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, on the front end. On the back end, you're just going to push out product. You're just going to print CD-ROMs and distribute them all over the world. And that's not how you're going to make your money. And so you find for every new copy that they produce, the marginal cost is barely anything compared to what they've already invested. Now, in this day and age where you don't even have to physically buy it anymore, you just go online and download it and it's uploaded onto your machine, or the person you buy the machine from already has it hardwired onto his computer. He just sends it to you, right?
Mm-hmm.
The same thing happens when it comes to designing a system in any business. It could be systems for finance, systems for HR, systems and processes, right? For HR, for finance, etc., right? The initial aspect of, again, like I said, determining the skills you want for the roles that you want to fill in, the talent mapping, so that's part of onboarding, right?
Mm-hmm.
The onboarding process, the development process, and the offboarding, so also an exit process. Designing those things would demand a lot of your time. Reiterating and getting them right, because you start with something, it doesn't work, you improve it, you try again, you keep working on it, continuous improvement. But the initial foundation is going to be hard. There's a saying that says, or at least people keep saying this, getting from zero to one, and I think even Belize asked this during the week on Tuesday, getting from zero to one seems to always be the hardest, but getting from one to 10 is a breeze.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least in context of what it took to get from zero to one, it's because always the foundation is the hardest part. And so the same thing, I say hiring quality talent is going to require a lot from you from the beginning.
Mm.
There's another aspect that makes it expensive beyond the external. This is now internal. Jesse, you're going to have to work on yourself. And people don't know this. Most people never actually sit down to ask themselves, am I a toxic employer? Am I a toxic leader?
Mm-hmm.
And that process is very expensive in the sense that it requires a lot of you. And I hope you're understanding that. I'm not talking about expensive from a monetary perspective purely. It will require a lot of you. It might even require you to change your style.
A lot of shedding off.
Exactly. Let me give you a simple example, Jesse. Or at least let me ask you a question. Have you ever had to change your leadership style because of the feedback you've received from your team?
Yeah, I think in many instances, especially for the market like where I am, I really had to understand the culture and how to apply myself to the culture.
Mm-hmm.
In other markets, it's a little bit different, and you'd apply yourself differently on how people do what they do, where they're coming from to do what they do, what informs their decisions, and all of it. And also, sometimes you just need to unlearn so much of what you already know and learn new things to be able to be effective in your leadership.
And coming back to now this point of effectiveness, I'm curious, did you see a change in the output of results by the people you were leading when you decided to make that shift?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially when you have to be a little more patient.
So now you could be more empathetic and you... That's funny. You could be more empathetic and you could understand like, okay, maybe I was being a little too hard on this individual. There's a context to... Let me give a simple example. When I first started my leadership journey as an entrepreneur, I didn't understand this thing of someone showing up to work late because of rain.
Mm.
That thing just, like, I'm like, huh? Rain,
mm-hmm.
water, you don't take a shower. Like, but then, like you said, you have to also ask yourself, you're like, but are you being considerate?
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I realized, I'm like, there's a context to it, right? And I'm not going to get into the details, but I had to realize that there were certain aspects of my leadership style that I had to change. Another example that happened to me, I realized that I was a super delegator. I was overly hands-off because I assumed that the people I've hired know what to do.
Hmm.
And that was just my thinking. So what I would do is I would give somebody a job, very vague in my description of my expectations, because I'm assuming it's obvious to anybody who is a self-starter what is expected from the work that is being handed to them.
Hmm.
I'd come back and I would lose my cool. I would cut wire with guys and I would be like, how are you guys not capable of this? How are you guys incompetent? And I would complain.
Mm.
Only to come back and realize that my leadership style was not good enough for the level at which my business was at. Because this is a startup. This is a business under 5 years at the time. And meaning that the type of talent I'm attracting are also slightly entry to mid-level career individuals. So these are people without the experience of 20 years, 15 years, 10 years.
They're learning together with you.
Exactly.
Mm.
So when I have a job for them, I had to explain to them, okay, so you're going to do this, and this is what you should expect. If this doesn't come back, you need to assess, why isn't it happening the way it's happening? And this is how you now adjust to fix for better results.
Mm.
I didn't think like that. And once I realized, because it wasn't just one employee, it was a bunch of them. And at some point, and somebody older told me, they're like, but Ephraim, you know, when you notice something across, if you see your employees, all of them are responding to you in the same way, it means that the problem is you. Because in every organization, there are A players, B players, and C players. But if your A players, your B players, and C players are all responding to you the same way, it means that there's something that you're doing wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to change that. And that really helped my organization. Because by the time I figured it out, it was not too late. And I had a good team around me. So now I started being more proactive in giving them directions. And it was not micromanaging to say I was following up on what they're doing. But what I did was, I would make sure that when I give them the task, again, like what we're talking about, the R&D, the foundation, I spent a lot of time giving them direction and telling them what to expect from all that work that they're going to put in.
Do you think it would be also wise to just get involved in the work? So you do the work together instead of just giving them the work. I think I've used that method of I will go to the front line with you.
Mm-hmm.
To exactly understand how I want it to be done,
mm-hmm.
and then I'll leave you to continue doing it. And I have found good results.
That's what I was about to say. There's a saying that goes, good managers push, but great leaders pull.
Mm.
And so where do you push from? Behind.
Mm-hmm.
And where do you pull from? In front.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're going to be effective as a leader, and you're going to lead a team successfully, you need to make sure that you are at, again, on the front lines with them, you're in the trenches with them, and you're fighting the battles with them. Why? Because it allows you, or it increases your sensitivity from an empathy perspective, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're more sensitive to their circumstances and that situation because you're with them. But then two, there are some things, and again, I repeat this, that you know that they don't know. Mm. And you need to hold their hand until they reach a point where they're confident. Unfortunately, sometimes you get an employee to that point and then they'll leave your organization. But like I said, when we started this episode, you don't want to make a mistake of not training people and then they stay, you know?
Mm.
And so the logic is that. I would say that, for me, my own reality is that you need to go and help do some work, you know, with them. Be with them in the trenches. Don't micromanage.
Mm-hmm.
What I mean by that is we talked about a results-oriented leader and a method leader. And I said, you know, if you want to focus on the method from the beginning of the process to the end of the process, that's micromanagement.
Mm-hmm.
If you focus on the method at the beginning with check-ins along the way, but allow somebody the free range based on the expectations you have at the end, now that is good leadership. And so if you give somebody a task and you say, go do it, and you tell them, and the person is like, I don't know how to do it. You're like, do it like this, like this, like this. Or you can even tell them, you're like, this is how I would do it. And this is what I normally get as a result. And I think this is the same results you get, but you have the freedom to try it your way. If it doesn't work, you can always go back to my way. But these are the stakes of not producing the results. Simple as that. So you've created, you've given them the method, but you've also given them an opportunity to explore other options, but you've also added a caveat to say that if they don't perform, there are consequences. Because this is not an NGO. Even NGOs have performance targets. It's not kumbaya. You're not just looking to finish money. You're looking to make a profit. So there has to be accountability for the work.
You said something earlier on, I'd like to pick it up. You have to be good at hiring, and you also must be very good at firing.
When it comes to hiring and firing, let's look at it as onboarding and offboarding, right?
Mm.
To determine whether someone comes on board, it's a process of, again, identifying skills and talent and then what we call fit.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes, when you in the process have realized that someone cannot do the job, and I'm not talking about somebody who needs to learn on the job and they're getting there. I'm talking of somebody either from a skills perspective. So, okay, there are two parts, right? The first part, it's your fault. And the second part, it's their fault. Sometimes it's both.
Mm-hmm.
But let me start with their fault, then I'll talk about your fault. When I say their fault, from a skills perspective, they don't have the skills, or they misrepresented the skills that they said that they have. Fire. Don't even think about it.
But you have to follow the legal procedures.
No, we'll come to the process of it, but I'm
we
not talking about the reasons.
To come to it today.
Wow. Okay. So I think we'll talk about it next week.
Yeah.
But that's pretty much it. I'll talk about, because I want to talk about the reasons, then I want to now talk about the process. So I think we'll talk about it next week.
Mm.
Yeah. I think that's it. Is there anything else you want me to continue on this?
No.
Hey, I think we're done.
Living Entrepreneurship by Salty, hosted by myself, Jesse the African Sun, and Ephraim Ramwenge.
Mm.
It's been a pleasure to have you here today, contemplating on everyday entrepreneurship challenges. And there is one of hiring and maintaining the right staff to work with you to achieve your goals, vision, objectives, whatever you might want to put it. Yesterday, I have this colleague in business who was asking me, fire that guy. Fire him. And mm-hmm. they'll call and say, what are your reasons why I should fire him?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I know there are some mistakes they are making, but firing him is not the option. I think I still can train them and walk the journey with them.
Mm-hmm.
And this person, I have told you, you need to learn. Fire that person.
But we've talked about it. I was about to tell you about the reasons. We'll talk about it next week, man. Fire that person. Look, I'm joking, man. That's someone's livelihood. Go to them. Yeah, man.
Oh, yes. Go to our social networks and check out what we have to offer and also recommend somebody.
Yeah, most definitely. You can find us on Instagram, on TikTok, on LinkedIn, across the world at Salty Africa. That's SALTEE Africa. And we're always on Royal FM at 10 a.m. on Saturdays and at 7 p.m. on Sundays. And then you can always catch me with Jesse and Belize in the morning, for Kigali in the morning, every Tuesday for the 8 at 8.
God bless you and bye-bye.